the growing conflict of intergalactic traveling and the sure destruction that would befall our world if we were not to act. He thinks us animals because we dare to stand against civilizations who would defy our way of life. Yes, he has admitted his guilt of treason in exchange for his pitiful existence, and it is the coward's way out. I have no respect for a man unwilling to face his mistakes and own up to the punishment due to him, but I am a man of honor. I will uphold my end of the obligation. No harm will come to this young man whose unwillingness to conform to our mission has made him a weak link in our chain of command. No harm will be brought to him because to do so might make him a martyr for his ungodly cause. A traitor is not a man. And Ensign Brendel Quinn is not a man in my eyes. Somehow, standing before Captain Alastra, knowing that his world was about to come crashing down, Brendel was in a state that resembled peace. A better word for it would probably be shock, but he wasn't aware of that. Everything seemed to move slowly. As if he were dreaming, he was running through sand. It only made sense to him that he had to remember to close his mouth when he realized his tongue was rubbing against dry teeth. If the worst day of his life had a soundtrack, it would be the muted thud of his heart beating rapidly, filtered through the congested ears of a hyperactive imagination. He wasn't at peace at all. The resemblance was just a facet of his mind mulling over the news of his imminent death and trying to come to terms with it in a way that didn't make him shut down. If it were up to him, he would have preferred the mental breakdown over whatever this was. Still, he was cognizant of the fact that the words Captain Alastra used to quote him were dead wrong. They were a fabrication, but he couldn't find the strength to speak up about it. Instead, he stood there and took the punishment, the marring of who he once was to his shipmates on the Telran. There was no coming back from this, so he just rode the experience to its bitter conclusion. Ensign Quinn, I have a signed document stating you wish to plead guilty of the charges set against you. Did you sign this declaration? Brendel stood, jaw slack, as he realized the ultimate purpose behind the deal Lieutenant Preble had issued from Captain Alastra. It was designed to emasculate him, to make him appear weak and unworthy for the uniform he wore. All of the realization in the world couldn't take any of it back, though. It was too late. He had made his bed, and now he had to lie in it. Yes, Captain. That is my signature. Captain Alastra sneered at Brendel with enough contempt he thought he might catch fire. Very well, Ensign Quinn. I find you guilty of treason. These charges generally result in execution, but due to our previous arrangement, you will be held in the brig until the Telran can safely drop you onto an inhabitable planetary body. If, during that time, you choose to violate the policies of my command, then you will be tossed out into the darkness. Brendel stood in shame. Everything the captain had said was meant to destroy the man he had been. He looked away from Captain Alastra. The moment for not looking weak was long past mattering. He was a condemned man. A coward in the eyes of the crew. He looked over to see Lieutenant Preble standing in the first rank. A look of sadness was etched upon her face. Maybe it was regret? but at this point it really didn't matter. Mr. Quinn, you are relieved of your services to the Gresham Navy. Enjoy your temporary stay on the Telran. I look forward to your disembarkment, traitor. And with those words, his career was officially over. The guards behind Brendel cut his uniform from his body, the tattered shreds of fabric that represented his once faithful service lay at his feet. The sound of his medals clanging against the deck echoed in his ears as he stared down at the mess that was his past. He didn't remember confessing to treason in the way Captain Elastra proclaimed it. There must be some mistake, Brendel thought. He wanted to speak out, but when he looked up, the captain was no longer there. He only saw the dead stare of Ensign Ilium looking back at him. Below those eyes was the wicked curl of grinning lips. Rage began to burn inside Brendel's chest where fear and anxiety once pressed against his heart. "What are you smiling at?" Brendel asked, bitterness etched in his every word. He was no longer an officer in the Gresham Navy. His indignant attitude meant nothing now. Finally able to speak freely, he wanted to berate the man before him. Knowing the records had to have been altered, and the only person with that kind of authority was the man gleaming at him as if it was the best day of his life. "I'm just surprised to hear a dead man speak." "I'm not dead yet," Brendel said sardonically. Ensign Ilium only shrugged at first, not breaking eye contact. "Yet" being the operative word, he replied. "Chief Harling," he said, looking behind Brendel to the guard poised to strike. Brendel didn't see it coming, but his body registered the impact of something solid striking the back of his head, knocking him out like a light. Chapter 9. Anki. If the bucket transport was the most body-wrenching ride Anki had ever experienced, then walking the passageways of the Ceratora was the most glamorous. Built for war, the Ceratora didn't pull any punches with firepower. But true to the society that made her, she boasted a luxurious decor clearly designed to send its inhabitants to heaven in a godly fashion. The honor bestowed upon the Luthien Navy came at the expense of its citizens. They made no attempt to disguise that truth. It made Anki wonder if it was worth it to send the Elder's children to die on such a magnificent machine, which would be forever lost to those who had to live with the sacrifices. She knew what her father would say. He believed in God, and looking at this vessel, he would say that the loss of this ship and its crew would be a sacrifice to God for protection. She wished she could tell him that if there was a God, then he shouldn't need sacrifices to do the right thing. She didn't understand how anyone could love a God who was the equivalent of a parent diseased enough to think abusing their children was a pronouncement of love. She couldn't reconcile herself to believe that a God like that could even exist. Sadly, if her father knew how she felt, then it would break his heart. Regardless, it seemed that being a child came with its own hardships to face. The wardroom was by far the most enchanting space on the ship. It was expansive, adorned with metallic luster and shining lights. It looked like the kind of dining area a world leader would use. Yet it was designed for the Navy, men and women sent to do the bidding of those in power. Subjugation looked nice when coupled with the sheen of polished wood and silvery metal. Seeing it all made Anki feel at least a little important. It was a sentiment she wasn't used to. Marines were expected to make use of poor things, to not require the best tools to do their job. So long as they had their hands and feet, then they were strategically placed weapons, with the purpose of violent delivery to the enemy. Her purpose was to fight and die, an expendable breath to preserve life on her world. Historically, Luthia took pride in treating its warriors as people of honor, but all it did was bring the realization that she was in her final moments before she would be called upon to defend her home, to lay down her life. It was the calling she thought she wanted to answer, but now it was a lingering question. The Ceratora was her home away from home, a mansion drifting away from the world she had known, away from the comforting pull of gravity. She never realized how comfortable being on a world was until her feet were placed on the drifting decks of a warship as it careened into the expansive darkness. It was made to be comfortable, but it wasn't. Not to her, at least. The bulkheads were a luster of white, almost pearl-like. Anki could see her reflection in the sheen. Her brown skin and long flowing hair pulled behind her ears were a stark contrast against the reflective surface. Her uniform, the dark gray of a Luthian marine, was in contrast to the blue worn by the navy sailors. She was something else on the ship, apart from it while also being a part of it. She was a grain of sand on a beach of strangers. It was overwhelming. She struggled to come to terms with her place on board. Did it really matter how temporary or permanent the accommodations were? The Ceratora was her ride into combat. It didn't matter if she belonged, just as long as she was there to do her job. Anki pulled a tray down from the pile and made her way through the chow line. There was a banquet of food, some preparations of dishes she had never seen before. She was nervous, being on a ship for the first time, so she chose something familiar. "There's no need to stress out my stomach on foreign foods," she thought. Food was sustenance. What the ship was offering was likened to what people ate to pass the time. Her body was a machine, fine-tuned for fighting. So she ignored the sugary stuff and opted for lean proteins and vegetables. She took her food to the first empty table she could find. All around her were naval officers, their blue uniforms looking crisp in a way that said they hardly had jobs requiring much labor. Life on a ship wasn't much like she thought it would be. Anki took only a few bites of food before someone interrupted her train of thought. "Excuse me, is anybody sitting here?" Anki looked up to see a woman in Luthian navy blue standing with her own tray, balancing a buffet of food. "No, the seats aren't taken," she replied, remembering to smile despite her nervousness. The woman smiled in return and sat across from her. Anki took note of the close-cropped hair around her ears while a tuft of longer hair was brushed to the side. It looked easy to manage, and she figured it was styled to save time. Most female marines kept long hair so that it could be tied up quickly, while female sailors kept their hair short. It was one of the distinguishing things between branches that everyone seemed to recognize while never really discussing it. The short-haired look still suggested femininity, and it complemented her paler brown skin and soft contours. The woman was very attractive, almost especially because of the fit of the uniform, which was hard to accomplish. It made Anki wonder why she wasn't sitting with the myriad of other naval officers in the wardroom. She definitely looked like the kind of woman who would have a magnetic attraction from the guys in the room. Anki watched as the woman took a few bites of her own food. There was a kind of tension that suggested someone needed to break the ice between them. Anki felt a little relieved when the woman spoke first. "I've never met a female marine before," she said. It was a matter-of-fact statement that didn't really mean much of anything, just a casual observance. It was polite, and that was all that mattered at the moment. Unki didn't see much of a reason to turn down conversation when she didn't know anyone on board. The least she could do is make an attempt to form some friendships, or at least an acquaintance or two.
I don't imagine so. Most women opt for Navy,
Unki said. She didn't intend to make a generalized statement or to be offensive. The other woman didn't seem fazed by it, though.
I was pretty active in sports and wanted to do something challenging, so I enlisted in the Marines,
she finished.
I'm Woola, by the way, she smiled. I think I forgot to introduce myself.
She extended her closed fist towards Anki while stifling a laugh. Anki reached out her open hand and grabbed Wella's fist in greeting.
I'm sorry. My name is Anki. Pleased to meet you.
They both laughed off the awkwardness of the situation and continued to eat.
How long have you been on the Saratora?
Anki asked.
Wella set down her fork and took a sip of Trechia tea.
I've only been on the Sara for half a year, but this is my second boat. The Flunik went to Port Henna for an extended repair cycle, and I had no intention of enduring that mess.
She laughed, but Anki didn't really know what the joke was.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure what's funny, Anki said, the slight curl of a smile on her lips in anticipation.
Wella winked as she put her tea back down.
Oh, Port Henna is the worst place to go for repairs. Sometimes ships go in and never come out, at least not fully functional. Besides, a sailor belongs in the dark, not holed up in some industrial complex avoiding the harassing gazes of welders and pipe fitters.
She held back another laugh in hopes Anki understood what she meant.
Anki nodded as she contemplated what Wella had meant. I understand what you mean. Port Cario is the marine equivalent. Sometimes you get shipped in and never get out. I guess I'm lucky to have received orders here, she said, the irony of saying she felt lucky weighing on her mind.
Wella winked at her again, but this time Anki realized it wasn't really a wink, but a tick of some sort. It wasn't as obvious, but each time her eyes closed, there was a gentle pull at the muscles next to her lips. Anki looked away, not wanting to be rude.
See there? The Navy and Marines aren't so different.
I guess not, she replied, and both women shared in the moment with laughter.
Anki's anxiety was lessening some now that she had met Wella. It was good to have someone to talk to instead of the isolation she was used to on Port Cario. Wella stacked the remnants of her meal on the tray.
I'm sorry to leave you alone, but I have a navigational brief with the captain in a few minutes, and it's bad form to be late. I hope you enjoy your stay on the Sara. She's an old boat, but one of the best in the fleet.
A wink followed, but it wasn't a wink at all.
Maybe I will see you around the ship.
Take care. Wella scurried off towards the scullery, her tray in hand. Her gait caught the attention of a few male officers, which made Anki smile. She wondered how long those boys had been underway to stare so wholeheartedly. Based on the gawking they were doing, she thought it had to have at least been a full cycle. But it was hard to tell only a day into her first ride.
The hormones of the opposite gender sparked more wars than history could tell, she thought, smiling again.
Anki sat alone, jostling remnants of her food with her fork. She wasn't very hungry and had nowhere to go, but she was feeling much better after talking with Wella than she had before, as the Saratora overwhelmed her when she first arrived on board.
At least the people were friendly, she thought as the news feed changed on the screen next to her. She hadn't noticed it before, but this time there was sound with the transmission.
Was hiding in the debris field of Keshnara, a colony planet recently destroyed by the Greshans. It is highly improbable that there are any survivors from the furrow, but scout and support ships have been sent in, including the Saratora. Luthien officials have not said whether or not the Saratora will launch a counterattack, but they did say that the situation is being closely monitored.
When asked if the attack on Furo was a declaration of war, I was told that the declaration had been made the moment aggression vessel entered the Luthien sector. We do not know the identity of the attack ship at this moment, but an investigation using sector probes has revealed the presence of aggression vessel in the Keshnarian territory. That vessel is sending out transponder signals, which may be an indication that the Greshans may be planning an attack on Luthia. We will continue to monitor the situation and will update the public on any developments we may find. The screen went black, and Anki realized she was standing, as was everyone in the wardroom. Keshnara had been a small colony before it was destroyed. It held no military purpose, and the Keshnarians were a separate people from Luthia. They had not chosen to unify with Gresha and paid the price for that choice. Luthia would soon be facing a similar decision, and it seemed the answer was a resounding no. Anki should have felt comforted by that thought, but instead all she felt was fear.
Chapter 10. Brendel. Sleeping on the cold deck of the Teleran's brig was unforgiving. There was no such thing as getting comfortable, just comfortable enough. Brendel awoke with a crick in his neck and lay there for a while, bleary eyes open just enough to see the quiet visitor sitting outside of his cell. The man had his back to Brendel, and for a while he thought it might just be the chief of the guard or a sentry. But the low, slumped shoulders and the lack of weapon was evidence that wasn't true. "If it was Ilium, he'd be watching me with a smile chiseled into his stupid-looking face," Brendel thought as he sat up. Brendel's stirring caused the other man to look up. It was Arrander.
"Hey,"
Brendel said sheepishly, trying to rub the stiffness out of his neck to no avail.
"Hey,"
Arrander replied. His voice was low and melancholy, not the typical flavor Brendel was used to from the other man. Brendel groaned as he stood up. The crick in his neck still hurt, but just standing vertical took some of the tension off his back. He walked closer to the cell door, the shimmering of electrons bouncing around, waiting for something to grab hold to, perhaps something fleshy to make a path of least resistance to the steel deck. He stopped before getting too close. Even the sound of sizzling electricity could evoke fear in a man. Brendel preferred to look at it as respect, but respect wouldn't make you piss your pants when it grabbed hold of you.
"Are you all right?"
Brendel asked. It felt weird feeling the need to try to console someone from his position inside the brig, but he could tell Arrander had a heavy heart. The brushing away of tears in his eyes had left a little discoloration on his cheeks. When the light hit him just right, Brendel could see the next tear forming in the other man's eyes. Arrander shook his head and brought his fingers up to press against his eyes, fighting back the onslaught of tears seeping past his fingertips. His body shuddered. The rhythm of his shoulders rising and falling matched the sounds of choked back sobs.
"I'm sorry," he said.
Brendel felt uncomfortable. Emotions weren't something he grew up dealing with very much. At least, not the important ones. He dug his hands into his pockets just so he had something to do with them.
"It's all right," he said, not knowing what else to say. "Captain Alastra is going to drop me off on some moon and let me live out my days. It'll be a peaceful way to go."
He left out the part about how discomforting the thought of starving to death would be, and that was the best situation he could predict. For all Brendel knew, this moon could seep poisonous gases that would make him go crazy and start eating his own flesh from the bone. "What's eating at you, Brendel?" a voice in his mind would ask. "Me!" he would reply with laughter. The scenario was unlikely,
But he had a lot of time cooped up in his cell to think about it. Arendur just shook his head.
No, I'm not sorry because of your situation. I'm sorry because I'm the one that put you there.
Brendel's eyes grew wide.
Wait, what do you mean you put me here? I thought it was Ensign Ilium.
Arendur nodded.
I felt bad for you after we talked. I knew you had a lot on your mind and were feeling homesick. I saw Ilium in the wardroom and we started talking about it. I told him I was concerned for you. He asked if you had been getting enough sleep, because a lack of sleep can cause depression. I told him I thought you were, and that maybe you just wished you were home. He seemed to understand the situation, and took some notes. He asked me when the last time you had called home was, and I said you were making the call as I left. He just smiled and said that was a good thing before he walked off. I promise. I had no idea he would go behind you and take the things I said out of context to bring you up on these charges. I'm so sorry.
He finished, his face falling back into his tear-soaked hands. Brendel fought back the urge to be mad at him. On one hand, he had betrayed Brendel's trust by going and discussing his personal business with someone else. On the other hand, he had gone to confide in someone else because he was worried about Brendel. That was something that would be commendable if not for the fact that concern ended with Brendel being framed for treason. Regardless of who did what, Brendel was already being sentenced. His punishment was already in the process of being implemented. In short, there was no going back. Worst-case scenario, Arendur could be charged for being complicit. Knowing Ilium, Brendel didn't doubt that possibility in the least.
"Don't say anything to anyone about this," Brendel said.
Arendur looked up, tears flowing down his cheeks.
"Why not? Don't people deserve to know the truth?"
Brendel nodded.
"You know the truth, and that should be enough. If other people find out about this, then more people could be hurt by it. Just keep your part about telling Ilium to yourself."
"But it's my fault you're going to die,"
Arendur said sadly. Brendel moved a step forward, but he was already too close to the barrier for comfort.
"Don't let it be your fault that you die too," Brendel warned.
Arendur looked up at him and acknowledged that he understood what Brendel had meant. Behind them, the hatch opened and Ilium stepped through.
"Speak of the devil,"
Brendel thought as the man strolled towards them. Brendel imagined him skipping gleefully towards his framed prisoner, ready to poke it with a stick to get a few laughs.
"Arendur, I didn't expect to see you here,"
Ilium said. Arendur went to say something, but was cut off.
"That's really interesting, but visiting hours are over. Get out."
It was an order. Arendur looked and Brendel nodded. The faintest smile to say goodbye curled his lips, and Brendel returned it. Ilium waited for Arendur to leave the room before he spoke.
"Captain Elastra told me you are entitled to a call home before we dispatch you. I said you were a traitor and didn't deserve it. He said you're technically a civilian in custody and there were policies regarding such things. Blah, blah, blah. I guess he doesn't want any red ink preventing him from becoming Admiral Elastra. So, here I am."
Ilium bent down and skidded the comm unit across the deck and under the electron barrier. Static electricity arched across the metal case as it entered the field, but the case would protect the comm unit. He stood.
The call will be monitored. Captain Elastra also said if you say anything that might reflect poorly on him or the Gresham Navy, then I have permission to toss you into the dark. Be sure I will be very interested in your conversation, he said with a smile, his eyes burning into Brendel, daring him to say something back.
Thank you, Brendel said as he knelt down to pick up the comm unit. Do you think you could monitor my call from someplace else? I'd kind of prefer to call home with the illusion of privacy. It makes saying goodbye to your loved ones easier, though I doubt you have any of those.
Ensign Quinn, the smartass till the end,
Ilium jabbed. Yeah, something like that, Brendel replied. He waited until Ilium was out of the room before he opened the comm unit to place the call. There was some truth to what he had said about privacy, though. It helped to be alone when he loosened the transmitter chip from the device. The comm unit would still work, as long as the two parts were touching, but take the transmitter away and that was a tool that might be useful later. Brendel thumbed the transmitter back into place and made the call home. It would take hours for the message to reach his mother, and by the time a response was sent he might already be stranded. It was almost a guarantee, considering how Ilium was reluctant to let him make a call in the first place. This was just a tease, a way of getting under Brendel's skin. But it was also an opening, an opportunity for Brendel to take advantage of. The comm unit chimed to let him know it was ready to record his message. He brought the camera up and looked into it.
Mom, I know you may have heard some things about me, and I wish I could explain, but things aren't looking good for future correspondence. I promise I will try my hardest to contact you again. But if I can't, I want you to know that I love you and miss you. I'm sorry for any residual discomfort and shame this situation may have brought on our family. Goodbye.
He closed the connection, knelt, and placed the comm unit back inside the protective case, not forgetting to keep the transmitter for himself. Brendel slid the comm unit back into the space outside his cell and waited for someone to retrieve it. He looked in his hand at the tiny chip that would allow electrical signals to be sent across the far reaches of the galaxy. So much power in such small things, he thought before placing it in his pocket. Now all that was left to do was to wait. He knew his time was running out, but he also knew he was better prepared for his future than he was moments before. His father had told him to take advantage of every opportunity as it presented itself. Of course, he had told his son this days before he ran out on his family, leaving Brendel's mother to cope with the loss of her husband and the burden of being a single parent. Opportunities were a tricky thing. Brendel had thought joining the Gresham Navy was the opportunity of a lifetime, but it didn't turn out that way. The spitefulness in his heart towards his father made him hope his father's opportunity had treated him just as unkindly. If it weren't for bad luck, he might have had no luck at all. That was the tradition for the Quinn family. But bad luck could turn on its head and surprise you. When it did, you had to be ready. And Brendel had been looking for the upside of things for long enough to recognize when he saw it. Time quietly ticked by. In his mind, Brendel thought of all the ways he could take advantage of his final moments on the Telran. People like to romanticize about going out with a bang, fighting your way to freedom. But in the dark, there was nowhere to go. It wasn't that he didn't want to fight, but he wanted to live more. He patted the inner lining of his brown jacket,
reminding himself of the broken emergency beacon sewn into place. It was the one he had worn when he joined the Grecian Navy, stepping into his training as a young civilian and thrust into an explosive training regimen that resulted in his commissioning after several months of Navy schooling. He had smuggled the emergency beacon in thinking he might need to use it, but things didn't hit rock bottom until it was too late. His rapidly successful career had been a blessing turned curse, as he was shipped out on the Telran to conquer people who just wanted to be left alone. He had a few tools now to try and call for help. It was enough to give him at least a little hope. But one thing he didn't learn from his father was that most plans failed. The beacon and transmitter were just backups for the plan he hadn't been presented the opportunity to initiate yet. But there was still time. By the gods, all he had was time.
Chapter 11. Anki. Gravity felt different in the dark expanse of space. Her body moved without the friction of Luthien atmosphere, outside of the gravitational pull of her home world. Sometimes she felt as if she were floating, but there was enough weight on her body to make her movements precise, each landing striking upon the surface she was aiming for. She had never trained in low gravity before and was surprised at how much she perspired despite the increase in endurance she experienced. It wasn't part of any regimen taught. Perhaps it was because moving felt easier without the pull of defiant force working against you. For Anki, training without full gravity was fun, but also worrisome. If she could maneuver better, then so could her enemy. The Grecians had a leg up in this war. They had destroyed or crippled more worlds in the Ellorian galaxy than anyone could ever imagine. They had the tactical advantage of supremacy in warfare. They might lack the ability to hide and sneak up on their opponents, but it was an advantage they had proven they didn't need time and time again. No one was standing up against them, at least none who could stand and take the fight to them in any significant way. Grecia had seized control of more territory in the sector as years went on, and they didn't appear to be in much of a hurry. It was the calm, calculated approach of seizing power that was so horrifyingly magnificent. But every strength of their fleet fought to cover a weakness, and if you take advantage of that weakness, then maybe you would have a shot at defeating them, she thought. Stopping Grecia's expansion wasn't a question of desire, but necessity. She couldn't help but wonder how advanced their fighters were compared to hers. The real fear was an even match being impossible, that she would come face to face with an enemy who could kill her in their sleep. Technology had advanced significantly since the beginning of the Ellorian Wars. But she wondered if Grecia even depended on technology anymore. They were always referenced as superior beings, almost godlike. But no one wanted to say it out loud. To admit the Grecians were like God was like saying God was mortal, imperfect. She remembered her father, the prayer he said to a god she wasn't convinced was listening, and her adrenaline spiked. Her combat instructor had taught her to focus on the important things, to find strength in a deep-rooted personal thought or memory to distract from the pain of fighting. He said this over and over as she had been tossed around and beaten. The bruises had bruises at times, and she was convinced that his banter was more of a distraction in order to trick her into losing. She thought it was his way to get in her head where victory would be more crippling. That was until she thought about something beyond the kicks and punches wrecking her body. The pain was still there, but it was some sideways thing of lesser importance.
The thoughts numbed her. Until they ran out and she got her ass handed to her again. The distraction of happy memories could only take you so far. Skills and persistence had to carry you the rest of the way. It was a lesson learned with more cuts and bruises, but a lesson well learned. She used happy memories to chase away her body's desire to give up when it ached from exertion. It worked for a while, but now was one of those times it didn't. Anki looked at the time as she left the gym. She hadn't realized she had been training for twice the time her body was used to, and it made the weakness of wanting to quit an easier pill to swallow. She made her way through the passageways of the Ceratora. Everywhere were other Luthians who had answered the call to arms. Many of them had already made friends or coupled up. It wasn't hard to tell which crew members were interested in the coupling, though. Usually they spoke with their faces close to one another as they whispered about their rendezvous, their eyes darting side to side lest they get caught. Life on a ship is strange in that way. All of these people could potentially die, but the things that made them feel more alive or less alone was against the laws of good order and discipline. She found it hard to rectify the kind of thinking that made such demands on its subordinates. At least she didn't have to worry about that herself. For all intents and purposes, she was a solo act, and could handle her needs herself if she needed to. It wasn't worth disciplinary action for a few minutes of unromantic romp time. Or maybe she told herself that because she still hadn't found someone interesting enough to endure. She already felt she was on borrowed time. Flinging into a relationship and intimacy seemed a little irresponsible. Her heart was in the right place exactly where it was, without the distraction of love. Her stateroom was centered in a busy intersection of passageways. They ran through the ship like blood vessels, reaching out to the outer portions of the Ceratora, everything leading back to the center of the ship. The heartbeat. Sailors walked on quick feet, moving through the passages on missions to carry out some kind of order from some unseen face. They were all connected in some way. The Luthian Navy owned the sailors and the Marines on board. But at the same time, they felt like different entities. Their ties were superficial, something beyond a difference in color of their uniforms. Beneath the surface, they were trained to carry out different roles on the battlefield. The sailors fought in the dark, whereas the Marines were dropped into the atmosphere and forced to fight their way through the hordes of enemies that came their way. So far, the hordes of enemies did more swarming than the Luthians did. Perhaps the Ceratora would have better luck. There was no day or night in the dark. Neither was there a time when the passages were void of people. It was like a city that never slept. That is, if cities could carry enough of a payload to wipe out civilization. The coming and going at all times made it difficult to know what time it was. Sometimes it seemed that time dragged slowly by. Other times it passed without much more than the blink of an eye. It was no wonder why so many people came back from the dark changed. If she thought about it too much, she might notice a change in herself as well. And she was only on board for a few days, or more. It was hard to tell anymore. Still, she craved some semblance of normalcy, but she doubted she would ever find it out here. She might not ever. The silent drift of the Ceratora through the dark reminded her of what Cirta must have been like before the wars, when the city was the epicenter of trade. History treated Cirta as a mythical place, where God's hand had touched the dirt and sprung forth a species of people to populate all of Luthia. Every world carried a similar tale. Each more similar than the differences would imply when those passionate about religion would debate. But there was something that made her pause to question, why such similarities could exist in an ever-expanding universe. Did God, or something else, touch the ground and breathe life into it? Somehow she doubted it, because in the end all of the races would snuff one another out, and the gods of those dead worlds would be as dead as the dirt under Greshen feet. Anki's stateroom was shiny. It reflected light in a way that was more distracting than beautiful. The fact that the light was artificial only made it worse. The bed was nice, though. Plush and large enough to support her body fully stretched. She had seen the racks for the regular crew, stacked three high with the confining feel of coffins. She imagined falling from the top rack and cracking open her skull on the hard steel deck. Sailors live such confining lives, she thought as she wiped the sweat from her face with her towel. Knowing how the sailors lived on board made her glad she joined the Marines instead. But everything was subject to perspective. They spent several years on board ships with lengthy careers that allowed some semblance of normalcy, many of them having families who deployed with them, both officers and enlisted, which made many Marines envious. For two entities with the same military, the sailors at least had something to look forward to. She, on the other hand, might not live to see her next birthday. Her amenities were temporary because she was a Marine combatant. A soldier was just another name for a pawn to those in power, and they didn't expect her to survive. She imagined the last meal would be something extravagant and filling as well. The captain of the Saratora was known for going out of her way to make soldiers like Anki feel welcomed. Temporary hospitality is what Anki called it. It was easy to be hospitable when it didn't have to last. Anki was sure Captain Lorek was a nice woman, but she thought the captain might also be a bit insincere as well. The mint on her pillow the day she checked on board was her first clue. The stenciled smile every time she greeted the sailors and Marines was another. If nothing else, it was a mask hiding something. What that something was, Anki had no clue. But she was sure there was something turning behind those eyes when no one else was looking. She shook the dark thought out of her head and undressed, the cool air in her stateroom causing goosebumps to rise on her sweaty flesh. Water rations were the same on the Saratora as they were on Port Cario, but the luxuriousness of the showers was a far cry from what she was used to. Still, she did have her own shower in her stateroom. At least she wasn't required to stroll through the busy passageways in her robe and towel. She was sure that was a show several of the young men might enjoy happening upon, hoping to catch a glimpse of what lay behind her robe. But she wasn't here for show and tell. Even if that were the case, she would have endured it in order to maintain her training regimen. She needed a consistent schedule. It might be monotonous, but it was something she could latch onto, depend upon. It made this part of the trek easier to manage. She couldn't help but wonder what it would be like when they reached their destination. Where would they be? She could imagine having to invade a Greshen ship and take over in hopes of saving some world from destruction. The firefight that ensued would be spectacular. She almost hoped for a low-gravity fight, weapons firing, Greshen blood dripping and floating around them. It would be a defining moment for the Luthian Navy, and for Luthia in general, to bring a Greshen warship to its knees, she thought. The thoughts were comforting, but also posed more questions. If they defeated the Greshens, what would happen? Would everything change all at once? Or would it be gradual like a stone rippling the water after dropping it? Would the war stretching across the galaxy finally come to an end?
Or would it elicit other worlds to step in, trying to fill the void left by a waning Gresham Empire? Anki fought the urge to keep thinking about it. In her heart she knew she would find out soon enough, and that finding out would only be the beginning of the end. The end of what? She wasn't sure she wanted to know. Chapter 12. Brendel. Everything was white. It was odd to Brendel that he was just now noticing the starkness of living on the Telran. The overheads and bulkheads were all white. The only splash of color coming from the deck in different shades of blue or gray, depending on which level they were on. The simple fact that the decks were color-coded was another thing he found odd to only now pay attention to. It made him wonder what else he had been ignorant to during his time on the ship. Now the vessel was scheduled to leave him stranded on a moon, probably no more than a rock in the inhabitable zone of the nearest star. And he was concerned about how white everything was.
"Keep moving," Ilium said behind him. The man was armed with a cannon, and it struck Brendel as odd that such a weapon was necessary to escort an unarmed prisoner off the ship. Sure, Brendel would be armed before being dropped, but right now his arms were bound and two other men flanked him, both just as well armed as the security officer was.
"I'm walking the same pace I was the last time you said something," Brendel said under his breath. "Are you in a hurry to drop me off or something? I mean, because I can wait. I've got all the time in the world. Maybe grab some chow, or..."
A hand grabbed the back of his collar and shoved him face first into the white bulkhead, making him stop talking and leaving quite a bit of spittle where his lips made contact. It was a rough landing, but not one that resulted in a busted lip. Ilium was apparently holding back, not wanting to abuse the prisoner while the video feed followed him.
"It was smart, but not original," Brendel thought.
Ilium kept him pressed against the bulkhead, probably shifting the weight of his cannon to keep him from dropping it, or grinning about how much fun he was having playing the tough guy.
"I didn't ask for your back talk, traitor."
The word had the inflection of too much tongue being used to enunciate the second T, Ilium's hot breath warming the back of Brendel's neck in a way that would have been erotic if the man had been a woman instead. Brendel shook the image from his mind and shrugged his shoulders against the bulkhead to relieve some of the pressure from his face.
"You have one more time to talk back to me, and I will shoot you in the back of the head. Do you understand?"
Brendel only nodded his head, holding back the retaliatory words on the tip of his tongue. The fact that Ilium would shoot another man in the back and yet considered Brendel a traitor was the biggest piece of hypocrisy Brendel had witnessed in a long time. Never mind the fact that Ilium would be disobeying a lawful order from Captain Elastra. Brendel was sure the death of a civilian at the hands of the Telran security officer, regardless of previous charges, wouldn't do well for his promotion to Admiral. But it was better not to say so. At least for now. Ilium was still in control, and there was no need to let on that Brendel was smarter than he was. There was still time for that, Brendel thought. Another shove, and Brendel was again walking towards the elevator. The door sat open like welcoming arms as he entered it, his face to the back, reflecting off the dull sheen of the metallic surface. Maybe not everything was white after all. The reflection revealed minor details about Ilium and his security detail, the biggest one being Ilium was the only one with his face exposed to the prisoner. It was as if he was trying to make a point of letting Brendel know who was tossing him onto the rock and to his death. It showed Brendel what kind of man Ilium was. One who made a point of being recognized for everything he did,
in hopes that the recognition would advance his career somehow. What better way to bring that kind of recognition than setting up someone to be a traitor and also being the one responsible for carrying out the sentencing? The sneer on the man's face did little to convince Brendel that the security officer wasn't actually enjoying this part of his job immensely. Brendel hadn't even noticed the elevator had been moving until it stopped, and with it, the thoughts going through Brendel's mind ended.
"Let's go, traitor,"
Ilium said, grabbing Brendel's arm with a tight grip and dragging him backward out of the elevator. Brendel turned on his heels to walk forward. No need to trip on the metal plating of the deck and get dumped off with a bloody chin. The elevator had dropped them off at the forwardmost point in the cargo bay, leaving the long walk of shame to be displayed to his former shipmates as they watched from the comfort of their offices and dorms. It was a slight relief that he didn't have to face them as he was hurled to his certain death. It would have been nice to say goodbye to some of the people he had grown close to while on board, maybe to shake Arinder's hand and tell him it wasn't his fault, though it partly was. But Brendel wasn't one for holding grudges. At least, he didn't think he was. Ilium might be the one to change his policy on that. When it came to goodbyes, he guessed that opportunity had slipped by already, and the past was nowhere to live when your future was so uncertain.
"You know, I have a real nice position that's presented itself recently,"
Ilium whispered. "Yeah, what would that position be?" Brendel asked, knowing he was being baited but not caring. He just wanted to fill the time it would take to get from where he was to the surface of the moon, without being confined to the horrific thoughts going through his head.
"Yeah, it seemed a position in combat control needed filling. The captain tasked me to take the job. Said he needed a real aggression he could trust to rain hell on the enemy. Apparently, the last guy went soft and turned on his own people."
Ilium racked the cannon as an audible warning that the weapon was pointed at the back of Brendel's head. The sound of metal grating against metal rang in Brendel's ear. He kind of wished he could hold the cannon, examine it, maybe test its accuracy against Ilium's face. "You know it didn't happen like that," Brendel replied. He fought back the urge to plead his case, especially since it wouldn't do him any good. He was getting off on that moon whether he liked it or not. Ilium chuckled softly.
"It might not have, but that's the story going round the ship. Brendel Quinn is as much a traitor as there ever was. In fact, I look the hero because I was the one who turned you in, and you want to know a secret? I didn't have to edit the video as much as you might think to make everyone think you're a traitor, either. It seems if anyone on the Telran was to turn on their people, then you were the most likely suspect."
The guards next to Brendel stifled laughter. It was obvious they were in on it as well. Brendel spun around and faced Ilium. Despite the fact that his arms were bound, he still made Ilium nervous as he glowered down at him. Ilium stiffened, the look in his eyes a threat that made Brendel nervous, which wasn't hard to pull off with the cannon in Ilium's hands. That kind of weapon was overkill. But then again, so was framing someone just to advance your own career. "Why would you frame me?" The question sounded more like an accusation. Brendel was finally starting to wear his emotion on his sleeve, too angry to fight it any longer. Ilium gave him nothing more than a raised eyebrow, but it was enough.
"I see. To further your career. You weren't man enough to stand on your own, so you needed to drop me off on a rock to make yourself look better. Is that it?"
The look in Ilium's eyes revealed what Brendel already knew. Ilium's snide grin looked more sinister in the dim lighting of the cargo bay.
Toss his weapon overboard, Sphere. Let's hope the fall doesn't damage it too badly.
Both men glared at each other, the ship settling to the ground as the sound of Brendel's gun striking against rock echoed below.